The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the post-TantrumCon show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Jonah Duke,
Ryan Pills,
Apprentice Dan,
Tino,
yeah, Katie Pills,
in the house! Woo! So we're really excited and simultaneously really exhausted. We just finished our four-day TantrumCon event in Spartanburg, South Carolina. It was fantastic, had a great turnout, had a ton of fun. Very thankful for all the sponsors and the people who helped and everyone who came out to the event. I know that I am riding on cloud nine. That's the only thing carrying me right now because the lack of sleep and the overindulgence of Monster Energy drinks is wearing through. Tell me some of you guys' favorite experiences from TantrumCon. Who wants to jump in first? I'm looking at Melissa.
Well, everything, of course.
Correct answer.
I also really enjoyed the Letter Jam breakfast that we had, yeah. Sponsored by CGE. And I am not a morning person, so I'm very glad that they had coffee and other treats at the breakfast. But we had quite a few tables, about eight tables of people learning Letter Jam, playing it. We had some people who already knew how to play, so they were able to help their tables out. But it was a lot of fun to see everyone, like, the light bulbs clicking as yeah. they get, like, a turn or two into the game and how they can give the clues and figure out what their words are. So that one was a lot of fun.
I think Tina and Ryan were both a part of that event. Is that correct?
That's right.
It was I say I believe because I was supposed to be, and I totally slept through.
You slept in. That's what it was.
Yeah, the attendees didn't really need our help too much, or at least Melissa explained the game really well, I guess, because I only had to help one table. I went around, and everybody's like, no, we got this. So
you guys were there to coach. Them. Did you play, or did you just, you were helping other people out?
No, I mainly just coached a juvenile individual, a kid. A child, as it were.
As it were. The child?
But it wasn't yeah. the child.
No, not the child.
Tina, did you play or did you coach
yeah,
as well?
I played.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Together.
I mean, we all explained it to each other and stuff.
You've played Letter Jam before?
Yes. We played it in Essen and, yeah, we had to directly buy it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That
it's
good?
That good.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
While you guys were doing that, Katie and Sarah and Lizzie Funkhauser. Yeah, we're playing Cartographers?
Yeah, we put together the largest play of Cartographers
in history. It's only been like
it was pretty impressive because what was the total, Sarah? How many we'd get?
We had about 75.
75, yeah. And it was pretty exciting. At first, it was kind of like, I don't understand. So Lizzie and I were walking around making sure people understood what they're supposed to be doing on their turns. Sarah was flipping the cards so that people knew what they were supposed to be doing. We had a huge projector so that everybody could see the same card. And it was a lot of fun. Like, by the second round, everybody pretty much had it. There was a girl who was there who must have been like 9 or 10. And she had the neatest handwriting, and the drawings were very clear.
Nice.
And she completely added all of her stuff correctly each time. I was like, this girl's got it. She is a competitor.
So next year you need to keep the papers and have then a contest for the coolest art and drawings, because you did have colored pencils
yes,
for them, right?
Yes, we supplied colored pencils, so
there were
I think
a lot
that
of really
it a
pretty
little
ones.
Bit. Yeah, yeah, everyone did a great job. I have a few pictures, and then we did some raffles. Thunderworks had sent some games to do as giveaways, mm-hmm. so we had three players who got a score over 100, mm-hmm. and then so they all won a small box game, and then we had a a couple other games that we raffled off. So there was a chance for everybody to be involved in that raffle.
Now, Cartographers is the one where you actually get to draw on other people's pieces of paper, right?
Yeah.
How did that work with 75 players?
Well, it passed to the right or passed to the left.
Yeah, we had two or three long rows of tables. And so everybody just passed, and then on the end, they passed across their back. So
yeah,
it actually worked really, really well.
I was really pleased. I mean, everybody caught on what I felt like was really fast to, you know, doing, passing off and doing the monsters. There were a few people who didn't understand that it was supposed to be, you know, you're trying to leave empty spaces when you're drawing on somebody else's. So they were putting it like on the very edge or, you know, so they didn't quite catch on. So I kept telling them, no, put it in the empty spaces. Put it in the empty spaces, guys.
Be mean.
I know. I was encouraging some cruel playing there, but
one of the other things that was great to have this year that we didn't have nearly as much of last year were interns helping us out at Tantrum Con. Thank you, Dan and Tina and Andrew and Jonah and everybody else that showed up. Dan was kind enough to cover a slot for me. I got double booked on the schedule and didn't realize it until a couple days before. How did the Captain Sonar experience go that I missed out on?
It was great. We had a lot of fun. We did a turn-by-turn round, and then it was funny. I was just saying, hey, do you guys want to stop? We're almost out of time. We can do real time. And then all of a sudden, the radio operator of the other ship was like, wait, no, I got this. Fire torpedoes here. And it was a direct hit and sunk us. So we rolled into the real time, and they beat us again.
Oh,
but we had a lot of fun. And it was kind of one of those weird moments, at least for me. I'm not used to it yet. But I said, my name's Dan. And one of the guys was like, don't you mean Apprentice Dan?
Nice.
Oh, yeah. And somebody next to him was like, what are you talking about? He's like, he's on the podcast. So just like this guy that you've never met, and I know that happens with you guys, it's like, oh, that's you. And somebody else asked me if I was like the Tantrum House bouncer.
Yeah, yeah. So.
No, that was Tina's
job.
That was
Tina, yep.
But yeah, had a lot of fun.
Could we change it to that title, Tina? Could we be Tina, the bouncer?
I have random kids come up to me and they're like, are you the candy lady?
Yes!
She's the friendliest bouncer we've ever had.
Right? She gives you candy when she tells you to leave. Yeah. Dan, did that learn to play? Everybody did at least one or two classes, or not classes, but learn to plays where we taught the game to people. Anybody have any memorable experiences in their learn to plays?
I taught Tiny Towns, and I think everybody who was in my my game, that was their first time playing. And so I had pulled out not the starter set of cards. We tried a few new cards. There was a couple in there that I had never used before, which was fine. But I had a couple people who chose really difficult resources with what had been previously used. Most of the resources in the game are used pretty much evenly, depending on the buildings. But I had one kid who went for this really, really difficult strategy. And had anyone else been paying attention to his board, I mean, he was down to most of his board was covered in resource cubes, and he just needed one or two of the exact right resource to make some buildings. He ended up scoring like 30 points with just that one type of building, which is huge in that game. Mm-hmm. And then I did have one player who ended up with a negative. They just didn't plan well. overall, they were like, oh, this game's amazing, even though I didn't know what I was doing. Now I know what I'm doing. I'm going to play it again. So I was hoping to bust out the expansion Fortune, but they had never played the base game. So I thought, let's do the base game once. And then if you guys would like to borrow the other one, you can play later on. But that was enjoyable. And then I also taught Paladins of the West Kingdom. And the guys I played with had a fantastic time with that.
One of my favorite experiences, going back to that, was playing Rising Sun with the folks from Keymaster.
I had that set up.
Rising Sun was one of my favorite games from 2018. It's probably getting close to my top 10 games of all time. I have to redo that list. So It's been a couple years since I did my top 10 games, but Rising Sun, I just love the gameplay, the art, the cool monsters, everything about it. And this was a six-player game, so everyone can have an alliance, which I think is pretty key to the game to have a really good experience. So enjoyed that late-night gaming with them.
Speaking of late-night gaming, did you...
So Will,
the record holder for the event.
The latest gaming. I think I won that record this year.
Or earliest.
Or earliest. That could be too. So Will and I were the night managers and stayed up with the late crowd gaming. So that ended at 2 a.m. every night. And we were cleaning up the one night, and a couple of friends of mine, Derek Funkhauser and Bob Crowell, just said, "Hey, we didn't get to play Maracaibo. We should play that right now." And I'm like, "It's 2 a.m. and this is a 3-hour game. Like, we could do it." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm surprisingly not tired at the moment. I'm not sure why." But so they set it up. I finished all my night duties. And then we started at 2:30 and we blew through the game, and there was little AP. I don't know if that's because our brains were just on autopilot, but we finished up at 4:30, and it was a great game. Loved every minute of it. Definitely want to get it to the table again.
I heard Derek had his best game ever.
Yes. He scored 181 points.
Did he win with that?
Yes, he did.
Sounds like it.
Bob and I were, I want to say 130s, but our scores were real close, and then Derek had blasted ahead. There is the track with the influence of the different factions, countries. We had not done much with that portion of the game, and there's potential to score really, really well with combat for that. And the combat is not between the players. It has little tokens that have combat, and you can decide which faction or country you're going to fight for, and it will have different outcomes, and then you'll go up on different tracks. And Derek had really focused on that in the game, and I think that's what won it for him.
I do want to give a big shout out to our sponsors, our exhibitors, all the people that just were supportive from the publishing standpoint. That was very, very cool to have them all involved in TantrumCon 2020. I think we had some great exhibitors at TantrumCon, and I think they had a great time.
Yeah, well, they definitely make us look good too. The exhibit hall that we set up, I'm not naming any names, but some of the smaller cons that I've been to, you walk into those exhibit halls and it's kind of just dark corners,
tables and chairs.
Yeah. I love the look of our exhibit hall. The Keymaster goes all out with some fantastic banners. Everybody had some really cool looking displays and stuff. Even Boardwalk had a big, nice backdrop in their area. As people walk in there, it feels like a really cool little shop. Plus, people had banners and some floor stickers and things. It just looked great.
Did you know what Boardwalk was doing? They were selling games, of course, because they're our local board game store. And they were saying, if we don't have it in stock, we'll get it to you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which was like, what?
Yeah, it was very cool. I think even...
Well, if they had it in their store in Greenville.
But they're just going to do it.
Yeah, that's right. I think... And it worked out really great because we had like the silver buffet for Bezier's game Silver. And I think they sold out of the silver copies. And then they went back to the store and got more. Katie gave them a heads up on that and was like, make sure you bring in your games because it'll move because people are excited about it. We did a bunch of different tournament meals. We had tons of Learn to Plays. Jonah was able to swing by for a little bit and check it out. Now, this was your first board game convention ever. Is that correct?
First board game convention ever. So if you're a convention pro out there, you got to give me a pass. This is my first one. But it was pretty cool.
You walk in the door, and what were you expecting, and what did you get? What do you think?
I walked in the door, and I don't think I was expecting it to be as cool as it was. Games on the left, games on the right, games in front of me. There were games everywhere, right? So I was walking around, seeing what everybody was playing, mingling with everybody, and it was exciting. It was good to be there.
That's cool. Glad you could get your feet wet. We'll pull you in full time next year and get you some experiences in there. And then this will be a good way for you to see what else measures up as we attend some other cons in the future.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, I thought that the what was it? A whole event where it was a play to win.
So you kind of, we had to play what's going on the entire time. Okay. That back wall, yeah, was stacked full of games.
Right. I thought that was really cool. I mean, who doesn't want to play the game and then have a chance to win it, right? So I thought that was pretty cool. That would have pulled me in as a as an attendee. I think I would have been spending most of my time trying to win those games.
Stand a good chance. Did you get to hang around for the table flipping tournament?
Oh, I saw a table flip.
Yeah, or two.
I saw it. It was pretty cool.
Were you there for the solo night or the two-player edition?
Two-player flips.
Okay, cool. Double. So the first night, we did Chad Elkins from 25th Century Games and one of our winners from the win-to-win board faced off. I think Chad may have hit an all-time high. He launched that Galaxy Trucker box like 25, 30 feet in the air.
Looked like the whole table went above his head. I'm not sure how he managed that.
If you watch the slow motion, he actually went like a good foot off the ground. You have to...
I believe the table actually did hit him.
We're not going to talk about that. Sorry, Chad. Thanks for not suing us.
Signed your waivers.
Right, he did. And yeah, may have bumped himself with the leg and still survived. That was the first night. Second night, we did 2 versus 2 and got some crazy flips on that one. And then for the third night, we actually got the 501st, I don't know how you say that, Star Wars local chapter. They had Kylo Ren and a bunch of other characters out there in full garb helping us force push the tables even further into the air. And
I saw a picture on Facebook that looks like you were force pushing some of those tables because of how you were, your hand was out and the tables were all scattering away from you. It was a really nice look.
I may just Photoshop everyone else out of the picture and then it'll just be, I hope to get those pictures and videos up, on the internet webs. I guess by the time you are listening to this, they should be live. So go check those out. Lots of cool photos from the event in general, from the table flipping. And
I was glad this year we decided to theme it a little bit.
We did
a cosmic flipping. So the first night was Star Trek, and then Sunday we had Star Wars. And so we decided to flip Galaxy Trucker. And I know there were people on Facebook especially that were like appalled that we would flip such a good game. It went with the theme. And actually, after the first two flips, when we picked up all the pieces, there was only one player board with a little corner ding on it. And that was it. They survived two flips.
They survived three flips before any damage.
We did have a box damage on the final flip. But other than
a table might have landed on it.
Well, the reason we had Galaxy Truckers because CGE sponsored the whole event.
What?
So we had to show off one of their games. Even if we flipped it, it was for a good reason.
Yeah, yes. I did see people say, like, shouldn't it be Monopoly? But it was on theme. We nailed it with the Galaxy Trucker action. So tons of fun was had.
Yep, we found pieces all over for the entire weekend.
All right, honestly, one of my favorite things in the con that was new for TantrumCon 2020 was the obelisk.
Yeah?
And I'm saying that obelisk needs to come back. I say in the future when we actually can do it, it needs to be interactive.
What? Talk about some serious stretch goals right there.
What do you think, Dan?
For everybody who doesn't know what the obelisk was, it was just a large sign with information on it.
It was a three-sided whiteboard, though, so you could write, like, we wrote all of our raffle ticket winner numbers on there, so you could reference it somewhere. It had all the hours for the show, and it was kind of the, map, central information.
You know, times for Will to figure out where he needs to go at certain times.
I'll admit, I referenced it quite a few times to see where I was supposed to be.
The only thing that blew my mind, this happens everywhere, is I would be standing like right beside it and somebody would be like, do you know what time the board game library closes? And I'd be like, I would just grab their shoulders and like rotate them 45 degree angle. Right here is all the hour. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it was helpful for sure.
Well, one of my favorite things that was new to Tantrum Con this year was miniature painting. And I thought that was such a huge success. I heard
you mean miniature painting.
Painting, yes. There was a misspell. We forgot a T on painting, and so it looked like painting. People were like, what, do you get small pinches if you go in there?
Hurts.
What's happening?
It hurts in there.
But anyway, Terry was great. He was an excellent teacher. I got to sit in on one of the classes. I learned a lot from him. Yes. And we had tons of people. I mean, I had tons of people come up and tell me, like, I'm so glad you did miniature painting. It was so fun. I spent several hours in there working on mine. And
yeah,
people were excited.
They were. And there were a few parents that thanked us. Like, our kids have never done miniature painting. They learned so much. spent like 4 hours painting, mm-hmm. and they're looking forward to actually using the skills they learned in the future.
I think that event, the miniature painting and the flea market, are two events we probably need to expand for next year.
I agree, they are very highly sought after events.
Yeah, I was. They sounded like good ideas coming in. We were like, we've never done it. Let's dedicate a small room to it. And they were packed the whole time. Yeah, it was fantastic. I didn't actually make it to the flea market. I saw it getting set up. I had a lot of people ask me, like, is it going on right now? And I was like, oh, I think you missed it. I think we only did it for an hour. Is that what we did? So extending the time maybe next time, or maybe doing different slots every morning or something.
Maybe a bigger room, or if we get in the hallway or something where it's the flow of traffic could be a lot easier, because there was a little shoulder bumping.
Traffic jam
because there was no clear flow. I mean, there was a flow, but people were not going the right direction.
Against the
flow. Because there was in two rooms and just all that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Man, I feel like we could keep talking about this for probably ever, although we have done it for the past 5 weeks. So let's jump from here into our Kickstarter conniption, and then maybe we'll chat a little more on the way out.
Kickstarter conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about 8 games coming to Kickstarter the week of February 10th, 2020. Kevin, go ahead and start us off.
All right. Well, this week, Odum Publishing is taking Card Weaver to Kickstarter. Card Weaver is a one versus many deck building game. There's not a lot of one versus many deck building games out there. I think of like Star Realms, which is a one versus one, or sort of like one versus, like you're all fighting against each other. But this one's definitely a one versus many, where one person is the bad guy and the others are these animus players trying to fight the bad guys. Melissa and I got to play this together, and I was the bad guy. She was the animus player. And you actually each have your own unique deck that you have as players. And there is a shared deck as well that you can also buy cards from. But you're buying cards from your own deck. And the animus players are trying to reduce the health of the bad guy down to zero. And the bad guy has to reduce all the health of all the other animus players to zero to win the game. There are other end game conditions as well, but that's the main point of the game. The couple cool things in the game is, of course, you're buying cards throughout the game. You're using what they call conviction to buy cards. And that is used to get, you know, things to get more attack value, more defense value. One of the cool things I liked in my deck were the nightmares. Whenever I flip a nightmare into my display, my nightmare goes directly into one of the animus players' deck discard piles, which will eventually get put into their hand or into their display in some way, which really hurts them. I don't know if Melissa wants to comment on that at all.
I did find it interesting that each player has their own market. So if I'm buying cards into my deck, it's cards from a specific set, not just like, not like Dominion, where it's cards that everyone has access to.
Yeah, one of the things in some asymmetric deck building games that you have out there is usually, even if you have a shared deck or even if you have your own deck for a player, you're only looking at one or two cards. In this one, there's a display for each player that you can choose from, which I think is really cool. So that's Card Weaver coming from Odum Publishing this week. Melissa, what do you have?
Junk Spirit Games is bringing Slip Strike to Kickstarter on February 10th. And a few episodes ago, we had an interview with David Girard, the designer and publisher, about this, and he talked a lot about it. It is a two-player game where each player has the same hand of cards, and you're trying to anticipate what the other player is going to play so you can end up in the right spot to attack them with the right weapon. So if you have a knife, you have to be in the same spot as them to attack. If you're going to use your gun, you have to be a space or two away. And you play your cards simultaneously and then reveal them. So it's kind of a little bit of a cat and mouse situation, trying to end up in the right spot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed playing. It's a nice, quick two-player game. And check it out. So actually a relaunch.
Yes, and that is February 10th. It plays in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes from Junk Spirit Games. It is called Slip Strike. Jonah.
Well, Smirk and Laughter Games is bringing Cinder to Kickstarter very soon. And you heard me right. Sender, not tender. Although you are a dragon looking for love. So you're able to set up your dragon dating profile and thumb through the other dragons that you might think are compatible with you. But of course, you're looking for love without getting burned. If you get burned three times, you lose the game. So you're able to thumb through and look for love. If the first date goes well, you earn love points. The better the dates go, the more love points you earn. And if things go well, you can roll dice and take it to the next level. So that's Cinder coming to Kickstarter soon with Smirk and Laughter Games.
I think that one is actually launching on Valentine's Day to fit the theme.
Right. Yeah.
Do you like, I feel like there should be cards in the game that are like easily lit on fire. And they should just be called Tinder, right? That makes sense. So,
make it a legacy game.
There you go. Make the whole thing.
So maybe on their next legacy. Kickstarter.
Or something.
Ryan, what are you looking at?
Coming February 12th from Grand Gamers Guild is Gorinto. Or Gorinto? I don't know. Gorinto. It's a type of Buddhist pagoda, I believe, in Japan. And this is a great game. We actually played this, I think, the first time I went to Origins. Mm. So it's been some years now. And it's been in development, and it's finally coming to Kickstarter. The game is a board, and there are several tiles on it. Each of them represent a different element. And players will, on their turn, use one of their element abilities to collect tiles from the board. Each element ability lets you do a different pattern of collection. So you might be collecting in an X shape or a plus symbol or like a row or a column.
Yeah, the fire one collects all the vertical rows, I think, like stuff catches on fire.
I think the earth one lets you dig into the tiles.
Yeah, take several stacks down.
Yeah. Everybody, and then you collect those tiles. You start off where you can only collect one, but as you collect additional tiles, each additional tile is one more tile that you can then collect. So you can collect one at first. If you then have two wind tiles, you would be able to collect three, I believe, because it's two plus one in that pattern. So there are four seasons to the game. Each season, you score points based on that season's goals. And then at the end of the game, you score an additional goal the key elements that were in that game. So it might be like two per wind or something like that. It's a pretty tight game. There's not a whole lot of complexity to it, but you can get pretty strategic with maybe your hate drafting as you watch other people play and trying to focus on one element over another.
Well, there must be something to it, because when I played it, I felt like I did terrible. I was like, I'm not picking this up. Like, you know, like Ryan actually picked it up really well and could figure out how to make plays that worked for him, and then I couldn't get plays that worked for me at all. So it's like
simple rule set.
He's thinking about this somehow better than I am.
I picked it up even better the second time at PAX because I didn't recognize it, and I was like, I've played this game before, and I had. So definitely check it out. February 12th, Gorinto. Dan, you got something?
Yes, coming on February 11th from Come On is Marvel United. It is a chibi-style miniatures game where you are co-op with 2 to 4 players. Each person is going to take on the role of a hero. And on the box cover, we've got Iron Man, Hulk, Black Widow, Captain America, Captain Marvel. I don't know if there are others at this point. And you're going to be controlling your own deck of cards, unique deck of cards, as you fight off against... looks like Red Skull, Ultron, and Taskmaster, maybe
others as
well.
So is it a cooperative game?
It is a cooperative game. Mm-hmm. You'll have different locations that you'll have to face bad guys on. So it looks like the villain takes a turn, and it might be a civilian that gets put on one of the locations, or a henchman type of thing, and then you take a turn playing cards, activating cool abilities. And there's an interesting mechanic. It's not just you playing your cards, but whatever card is played last, the next person could potentially use an ability off of that card. Ooh. So it's not just your own things. You are working together. So, yeah, I may want to play this card, but I also have to think about the fact that maybe this other card would help you more on your next turn. Oh. So each player or each character has abilities that would fit with those typical heroes, and you go around trying to utilize your abilities to defeat the evil mastermind before his master plan comes into place.
It's probably just because we've been playing Marvel Ultimate Alliance, but I'm actually really excited about this one.
Yeah, when I first saw Chibi...
Are there miniatures in this game?
Yeah, there are
Chibi
minis.
Miniatures.
Chibi miniatures. I don't know.
Chunky miniatures.
That's not my favorite style, but
you know,
the
like
more...
like Arcadia Quest. And
yeah. Like yeah. But, I mean, are they used in the game, or are they just like for fun?
It looks
I mean,
like
either
it,
way.
I mean, it looks like you're going to these card locations, so I'm assuming you're moving those miniatures around to wherever it is to fight whoever it is.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Tactical strategy.
But yeah, the more I read about it, the cooler it looks. All these games that make you spend money.
Right.
But there will be more information on this coming out. There's not a ton of it right now, so check out cmon.com. Again, that's February 11th coming from Cmon. Sorry. And Katie, what's next?
All right, so I am talking about Wonderland War. Mm. And I know I've been very excited. I keep seeing art, and I finally got to play it at the
Tantrum Con.
As I say, at Tantrum Con.
she forgot.
I'm so excited. I was forgetting tongue words. Tied. And I'm also tired. But I got to play it, and it's one of those where I've been loving the art. I love the IP, and I'm like, I want this game to be really fun.
No pressure.
So, yes, but I actually got to play it, and I actually had a great time playing it. I played it with Lizzie and Sarah and Ryan.
I played, yes.
I couldn't remember you were there.
And Ryan.
I even said,
she's
like,
really
oh,
tired.
Ryan,
she is.
You can do this with me. No, you didn't get to play Wonderland War.
Yeah. I was the Jabberwock.
Oh, yeah, he was the Jabberwock.
So I had poison and claw abilities.
Yes, so this is, this game is a game where you are building a bag of tokens. And depending on how you build your bag, you draw them out, and that's going to give you your abilities during this war. It is asymmetrical. I was playing as a Mad Hatter, and as...
I was the Queen of Hearts.
Yes. Ooh. Sarah was the Queen of Hearts. And Lizzie played as Alice. Mm-hmm. There are going to be some other options as well. But those were the four that were available to us in the prototype we were playing. But you have your first part of each round. You're at the Mad Hatter's Tea. And you choose cards there that allow you to put new tokens in your bag or to put workers out on the board that'll be in some of the fights later. There's different locations that you're warring in. And as the Mad Hatter, one of the options was just to embrace the madness madness is something that gets added to your bag and basically removes people from your faction in the war. So as the Mad Hatter, you have the option of like just embracing that. And I did that. I was like, I guess I will. It's his name. He's the Mad Hatter. So I did that and I ended up winning. So
it worked out well for you.
It did. I was like, I'll go this way and I guess I'll just totally push for it. So I did. We had a great time, playing and, learning from the Funkhausers how to do that. That is coming February 11th. We also have an interview later. We're going to get to talk about that a little bit more. That's coming February 11th. And Will, you had something.
I do. I'm looking at the game Hunker from designer Aaron Franco. Its tagline is fierce friendship, frosty fortitude. It's got a pretty interesting theme, actually. It's a hex-based game that takes place in the middle of the woods. A bunch of wildlife animals have gotten together. The fox has convinced them all that they should compete to see who can do the best job of preparing for the coming winter. So it's a hex-based game where you will be doing kind of area control. You are going to be foraging for food to store up for the winter. And each round, you'll roll a die. And then on top of the existing hex board, you're going to place an acrylic snow tile. So the game actually looks pretty cool once you're done with it because snow keeps building up each round. You have to be careful not to like trap yourself in a corner.
You're going to be gaining this food, storing it away, and then you're also going to be building kind of alliances with the other players in the game. So you'll be playing these friendship cards that will allow you to either share resources or move around each other and different things like that. And then as winter encroaches and starts to fill up the board more, the game finally ends when the last snow tile is laid. The entire board is covered, and whoever has managed to stash away the most food for the winter wins the game, and the fox crowns them as the woodland champion. I don't know about that part, but sounds pretty interesting gameplay-wise. I like the idea of a shrinking board, of doing the resource management. This one is a 2-4 player game. Takes about an hour to an hour and a half to play, so a little bit of meat going into it. They're self-publishing it and bringing it to Kickstarter probably on Tuesday. I can't ever do the dates, but check out Hunker, Fierce Friendship, Frosty Fortitude. Sarah, what's up next?
Coming February 13th is Boomerang Australia. This is coming from Grail Games and Matago. Matago is actually publishing the French version, and Grail Games will be bringing the game to the U.S. in English. This is a reimplementation of Scott Alm's Boomerang game that was published about a year, almost 2 years ago. And so in the game, it is kind of a mixture of a roll and write like Yahtzee, where you're marking scores on your paper. But there's no dice or anything. It is a card game. And so you are drafting cards. And like the name suggests, you're hoping that card boomerangs through everybody else and actually makes it back to you so you can score it. And it has a fun little map. You're trying to go around Australia and try and see all the different sites throughout the country and get points for them on your paper. This is kind of, it was a roll and write plus the card drafting and set collection, which is kind of a unique thing, I think, so far with roll and writes, and they're pretty popular right now. They will be also bringing Boomerang Europe and Boomerang USA. Those will be coming out as well. I'm not sure. I think you can pledge for those on the Kickstarter. I'm not quite sure about that. But in those ones, it'll be the maps of Europe and the United States, and you'll be seeing sites in those particular areas of the world. So let's.
That wraps up our Kickstarter conniption.
It does. Should we jump into an interview with the house guest?
Let's do it.
Hey!
We've got James Hudson from Druid City Games and Skybound with us here tonight. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How are y'all?
I bet you're
tired. I bet you're tired and ready to take a nap.
Yes.
Yes. Or a full night's sleep would be more like it.
Well, I did get to sleep in today. I didn't work or anything, but yeah.
Running events is exhausting. Like in my old career, we had a 60-ish thousand person event that we did. Convention in a much different industry, but it's a ton of work. Drains you.
It's true. It was enjoyable and we super enjoyed it. And one of the very enjoyable parts for me personally, was getting to try out Wonderland's War.
Yeah.
Yes. So do you want to tell us a little bit about, maybe some of the inspiration that you had for that, or what even made you choose Alice in Wonderland theme? Because I, first of all, love that theme, but I want to hear why you chose it.
Yeah, me too. I love the theme. I love the world. I love the whimsy, you know, the craziness that is Alice in Wonderland, and which is weird and funny because we ended up going with a narrative that all the whimsical has been sucked out of the world and we're at war, which is not a very Wonderland-y type thing. One of the big inspirations early on was knowing Manny Trimbley. I was like, and seeing some of his before Dice Throne work, some of his comic book work. He's always had strong female characters that he drew, and I was like, Manny, you really should do an Alice. Like your version of Alice would be, because I describe Manny's artwork as like American anime. It's kind of what it looks like to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's got that feel.
And I was like, your artwork would just be bonkers. It would be insanely bonkers in a Wonderland setting. And, you know, true to Manny, super humble Manny. Oh, yeah, yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. I'd have a lot of fun with that. That'd be good. And, you know, he's like, but I'm doing this little thing called Dice Throne. Maybe you've heard of it. And so, you know, he's been busy for the last 2 years, but he did draw me a concept, a piece of concept. And this is back when I was going to call the game, I think it was like Alice's Wonderland or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was more of a worker placement game. And then as we, anyway,
changed a lot then.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's went through a lot of different iterations, and it's funny that game designs do that sometimes, right? You know, I thought initially I was like, I wanted to make a little bit of a sandbox game where people could just go into Wonderland and do whatever they wanted to do and spend a lot of time just playing like a worker placement-y sandbox type game. And over time, over through the design team, it changed forms quite a few times. And then it was like the narrative and the mechanics finally meshed up one day. It's actually a really long story that does not fit into the 10-minute bracket. But this was one of the hardest game designs I've ever had. It is the hardest game design because it was just, I mean, there was times where me and Tim, Ben, John, Ian, we were just like, you know what, guys, this just isn't going to work. We've been beating our head against the wall for a year, and this design is just not working itself out. And we actually had a meeting where we all came together and we tried some more changes because we'd taken a couple months away after we went to the you guys came through. It was the castle where we had worked on it.
Yes. Will and I stopped by while you guys were at your design retreat at Ravenswood. Yeah,
we all walked away from that thinking and hating what we had just played. Like, we didn't like it at all. And so we were like, let's take a couple months off. Yeah. Let's take a couple months off. Let's, and then we'll, you know, get some fresh ideas and then we'll see if there's some changes that we like. So they all fly out to LA. We spend 3 days. We're like, we're going to spend 3 days just figuring this out. We play it for 2 days and we hate it. We still hate it. It's still not where we want it. And so, like, the last night, we're sitting around and I'm like, hey, what about, I was like, you know, and everybody was already really tired and exhausted and mentally drained. And I'm like, what do you think about a bag building combat system? And I got zero response because I'm telling you, people were done. They were just like, no. And I was like, well, just go with me for a second. What do you think about this, you know, as far as an idea? And I was like, well, we got tomorrow. What if we just make the most basic bag building idea and just try it? And so we went in the next day, we tried that change, which then spurred on two or three other changes to make everything kind of fall in place. Mm-hmm. And then that was the basis of what Wonderland's War is now. So it was,
you guys put that together pretty quickly then, because I got to play a prototype at Origins and it was an early prototype. You guys had a little bit of art from Manny, but not mm-hmm. all of it. We got to see a fully fleshed out prototype here at Tantrum Con. But you guys had the bag building portion and even the Mad Hatter's Tea Party put together pretty well. So that was a good job putting those two together like that.
It was quick, but it was also, you know, I mean, we still used a lot of the concepts that we had in the game previously. So it wasn't like building everything from scratch. It was like porting things over into a system that was just more fun. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing. Like all the mechanics were working before and we were getting, you know, in scores and everybody would walk away from that version of the game previously and go, I mean, we did stuff, but it wasn't all that fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just funny because you're like, we thought we had good ideas and like theory crafting those ideas in our heads sounded really good, but once they got to paper, they just didn't flesh out to fun. And so we just kept, and I'm not so much a designer as I am a developer, I think. And I'm like pushing everybody to be like, there's a fun version of this game somewhere. Let's just keep going. And we eventually got there because you guys got to experience
somebody pushing to say, look, this can be better. Let's do it better.
Well, one of the problems that you'll probably find as you talk to more designers and developers is that they could probably work on a design literally forever, like mm-hmm. never be happy with it and never stop. Mm-hmm. So there is that fine balance of like, okay, what is presentable to the world? What are we happy with? Is this the experience that we want people to have?
It's much like art. It's hard to know when to stop and when to quit perfecting every little bit. And there's a balance there of knowing like this is good this way, and leaving that piece of artwork for your audience.
But I think the fun factor for me, because I'm always looking for the fun factor in games, right? Like what's really like what's going to make memorable moments, and y'all probably got to experience that a little bit as far as like having those abilities go off as you draw those chips out of your bag head to head battle. It makes for some really exciting moments.
Oh, yeah. When you pull out a poison from the Jabberwocky and you're like, no, what is that still doing in my bag?
Yep. Oh, and you can't block the poison either with the shield because it's not technically a madness chip. You just got to eat that poison.
Ryan was so satisfied in our game playing the Jabberwocky.
Yes, I think he really enjoyed handing out poison to everybody.
It's a fun, there's definitely fun thematic mechanics that's been built into each of the asymmetric player powers.
We really enjoyed the asymmetric part of that. I kept wanting to do, I played as the Mad Hatter, Sarah played as the Queen of Hearts, and she kept like spreading her little meeples around into different areas. And I kept wanting to do the same thing and then going, oh, no, that's not my ability. I can't do that. Sarah, she's so lucky.
Hey, pro tip for your listeners. One of the keen strategies for the Red Queen, because she can spread her supporters around, is she can get those early on spread out. And then if she can get a lot of quests, it's really easy for her to like limp into some of these battles with not a lot of support and then dip out to complete quests. And then just focus on building her engine.
What I did.
She had she actually got a ton. I don't even remember. She got like 100 points off of her.
I had lost a lot of battles. And I had probably 80 worth of points from the quests.
Yeah, it was a lot. She looked like she was really far behind.
The whole time.
The whole time. And then
Katie was like, I did this one quest, one we were handed at the beginning of the game, and that was it. And I was like, oh, I got 8.
Yeah. So she definitely had the most quests finished for sure. So she kind of caught on to that little trick for the Queen of Hearts. But
yeah, I would say that one of the best parts about the game is the asymmetric side of things is you probably need at least 2 to 3 plays with each faction to get a real feel of the symmetry that they've got going. And so, you know, with there being 4 or 5 potential factions in the game, you've got 20 plays in the game before you feel like you've explored everything and you know which one's your favorite, right? So I hope that's what people find when they get to play the game. They're like, you get a lot of gameplay out of it, right? Like, I don't even know what games I've played 20 times anymore.
Asymmetric abilities are they don't take long to learn and figure out. It's not like some games where you're playing an entirely different game from everybody else. You're all doing the same thing in the game, but there will be a different focus for different, and your player powers will be different, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the learning curve is not what some of the other completely asymmetrical games are, which I appreciated.
Yeah, we were trying to split that difference too, of like, you know, because the theme with it being Alice in Wonderland is you're going to attract a mass market. You know, everybody has a love of Alice in some form or fashion, whichever the character is their favorite or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, well, we don't want to make this like a Lisboa. We don't want to make this super complicated, but also we want to have teeth, you know, to be fun and have enough to it that people can really enjoy it as a game. So I think we've struck that balance. It's going to be a pretty meaty rule book, but I feel like once you've played it, you're like, okay, I got this and I'm up and running.
Yeah. Derek kept checking in on us after that first round to see if we needed help. And we're like, no, Derek, we got this. You know, we played the first round. We know what's happening now. So, but we did really enjoy it. We loved getting to play it with the Funkhausers. Would you like to tell us just a little bit about, you know, what's coming in your Kickstarter, when it starts, how people can check out more information, you know, that kind of stuff?
Sure. We are kicking this thing off. I don't know when this particular podcast is going to go live, but February 11th. So that's when it's launching. And we've got a couple of different things going on. So if people aren't familiar with the way that we've done our last couple campaigns, we don't really do stretch goals anymore. It's one of the things I feel like that makes a lot of bad atmosphere and juju in the Kickstarter world when people are chasing that carrot and the money. And in previous campaigns, when there is a stretch goal, you've got full backers yelling at $1 backers in the comments, if you do your part, we'd hit this stretch goal. Bah! And, you know, that's not the atmosphere that you want for
it's
a Kickstarter.
Not community building for sure.
No. And so back on Tidal Blades, we launched a thing that we've coined the narrative reveal system. And so every day there'll be something that we're showing you that we're adding to the game. And we're just poker bluffing. We're just betting that our campaigns are going to have momentum and we would be adding things to the game, just like we would a stretch goal. But we're just not going to put this temperature, you know, gauge on it to say we've got to get this amount of money to add it, right? So, but now the narrative that we're building around the world that we want you to be invested in is going to come with an added thing to the game. And so that's what we did with Tidal Blades. And, you know, the first 3 days we had people with torches and pitchforks yelling at us, how can you not give us stretch goals? This is bull crap. But then about day 5 or 6, they were like, hey, wait, these stories, they're really good. And we really like this character. Well, tell us more about this. I'm like, we just have to wait till tomorrow. There's more coming tomorrow. And so that's exactly right. So we got a narrative that'll play out over the 22-23 day-ish campaign. And I'm hoping people enjoy it because it's a very interesting take on why is Wonderland at war? Mm-hmm.
But as I say, there's a little bit on BGG. It's more like a teaser information, but yep.
Our listeners will just have to check out the campaign to figure out the rest of the story.
And we do have a 48-hour community unlock. So it's kind of like our version of an early bird. And it is – we're going to upgrade. So you guys got to see the castle tokens, like when you would win a battle in a region, you'd add your castle. So if we can get 5,000 backers in the first 48 hours, and that can be of any pledge level. So if you want to back for a dollar just to help us unlock the community unlock, come on. We will upgrade all those into miniature castles.
Wow.
So all players will have – those instead of cardboard tokens. So it's a substantial upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, James, for coming on our podcast episode and telling us a little bit more of the behind the scenes and the process of designing and developing Wonderland's War. We wish you the best of luck on your campaign.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
All right.
We'll hopefully talk to you very soon once again.
Bye. Bye.
Lots of fun having those guys on the show, being able to talk about all the cool stuff that they're working on. I wish now that I had gotten a chance to play.
I got to play it.
I
was Mad Hatter as well.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
Did it work for you? Did you win?
I didn't get to play a whole game, but I was doing pretty well.
Had it in the bag?
I got Tweedledee and Tweedledum as like supporters, which was kind of fun. So.
Excellent. So I think we're pretty much to the wrap-up phase of the show. Without TantrumCon to promote, I just don't even know where to go from.
Well, promote next year.
Huh? Oh, okay. Come to TantrumCon next year.
2021.
February 4th through 7th. It's already booked. Check
it
out.
We got dates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark it on your calendar.
Don't go to the website because it looks like old stuff. But yeah, go ahead and save the date because we will be back. Tina, will you be back? How far in advance will you know if you're joining us for TantrumCon 2021?
I don't know. Depends.
She's seen things.
She's like, I'm out. Let me go.
She's like, I don't know.
We're definitely pulling Jonah in for next time around. He's going to be, let's get him running some games. Dan already ran Captain Sonar. You in for some teaching some stuff next year?
Most likely, yeah.
Probably Marvel Legendary.
Yeah, ooh, there you go.
He's like, I'm in.
Well, probably Marvel United as well. If that's not the backers.
That's true.
Oh, we should talk about Forge. Yeah. Talk about Keyforge.
We need to bring that back.
We do. So did you, I think Tina may have snagged a copy.
Two copies.
What?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we have time tonight. If you guys need to match off, we can
and
probably.
I have decks with me.
What?
He's always
like a deck
prepared.
Over here.
It's in his back pocket right now. thank you guys so much for joining us for this episode. We will look forward to talking with you guys yet again next week. And one more time, huge thanks to everybody who came out to TantrumCon. See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's Barry, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.